The week started off in a shocking way. Can you tell us more about the brutal killing of six aid workers?
Yes, that's right, Matt. It was really shocking and very sad news. Six aid workers were killed last Saturday on the Juba Pibor Road. The staff from a national NGO were reportedly ambushed in their vehicle in a government-controlled area. Their bodies were found on the road by other members of the convoy who were some way behind. Now, the United Nations and the international community has condemned this appalling and pointless loss of life. The head of UNMISS, David Shearer, sent his condolences to the family, friends and colleagues of the people he described as dedicated aid workers. He also called on the government of South Sudan to investigate the murders. The UN humanitarian coordinator for South Sudan, Eugene Owusu, said, at a time when humanitarian needs have reached unprecedented levels, it's entirely unacceptable that those who are trying to help are being attacked and killed. On Tuesday, a convoy from UNMISS, together with members of CTSAM, that's the Ceasefire Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring Mechanism, visited the location, and their investigations are underway. Now, just to look at the context here, at least 79 aid workers have been killed in South Sudan since the December 2013 crisis, including at least 12 killed this year, 2017. At least 8 humanitarian convoys have been attacked already this year. And that makes South Sudan one of the most dangerous places in the world to be a humanitarian aid worker.
What is the latest update on the Regional Protection Force?
Well, as you probably have heard, Matt, last week the head of UN peacekeeping operations, Hervé Latsous, who was here, he announced the arrival of the first teams of the Regional Protection Force, or RPF. And I'd like to take a few moments just to say a few words about the RPF. Some people are asking why its deployment is taking so long. Well, the government agreed to the full and unconditional deployment of the force. There have been a number of logistical and administrative delays to the deployment. First, there are a number of challenges obtaining suitable land in Juba to accommodate the additional 4,000 troops. And after a period of several months, the first plot of land next to UN House has been put aside for the partial location of the force, and it's currently being cleared for unexploded ordnance. The RPF will be comprised of Rwandan, Ethiopian, Nepalese, Bangladeshi and Pakistani troops.
I thought this was supposed to be regional, not international force.
That's right. Well, some of your listeners may justifiably ask why countries from outside the region are being included in what is supposed to be a regional force. Well, the answer is because these troops will fill so-called capability gaps. These are gaps in provisions that could not be met by troop contributors in the region, such as specialized engineering capability. As so-called enablers, they will form part of the first vanguard of troops and provide engineering and medical capabilities necessary for the RPF's full deployment.
When can we expect to see the RPF?
Well, the RPF command headquarters is already in place in Juba. The team is currently preparing for the incoming RPF vanguard units, which are expected to be in place within the coming weeks. The specific time frame for the deployment is to be determined, but it is going ahead.
The head of UNMISS has been back on the road. Where has he been this week?
You're right, Matt. This week he's been to Kwadjok and Awil. This was his sixth field visit in the 2.5 months he's been in the country, and I think that's a real indication that he wants to understand the challenges faced by people everywhere, not just those people living in Juba.
What did he learn in Kwadjok?
Well, one of the most interesting aspects was the interaction with the Gogreal state governor, Gregory Denkwach Adewol, who he met on Wednesday. The governor told Mr. Shearer that he'd closed 7 roadblocks in the state since February this year, leaving just 2, a move which has facilitated both trade and enabled humanitarian access. Mr. Shearer welcomed those closures and said that they bring many benefits to the citizens living there, not only makes it easier for the UN to provide humanitarian assistance to those in need, it also means that local people can travel freely and undertake economic activities. He said, and this is important, that he hoped it can be sustained and replicated elsewhere in the country. Now, as you know, Match, the United Nations peacekeeping mission in South Sudan is mandated to provide protection for humanitarian convoys delivering aid across South Sudan. So the closures of these checkpoints are really important. For example, a convoy delivering humanitarian supplies from Juba, here in Juba, to Bentiu in the northeast of the country can encounter and will most probably be stopped at up to about 90 unofficial and official roadblocks. This 1,000-kilometre journey can take from 2 to 3 weeks, depending on the condition of the roads, but also, crucially, how long convoys are delayed at checkpoints. And a comparison that Mr. Shearer often makes is that same 1,000-kilometre journey in a developed country may take 10 hours. UNMISS, of course, never pays to pass through checkpoints. Mr. Shearer said that if it did so, there would be 1,000 the next time a convoy made its way to Bentiu. Now, the prompt delivery of aid by UN humanitarian agencies and partners in Gogoriol State, which incidentally is not on the road to Bentiu, is becoming more critical as people there face up to living on a dwindling supply of food.
And then it was on to Awil.
That's right. On Thursday, Mr. Shearer heard how the ongoing conflict in South Sudan is affecting food security in some of the more stable states in the country, like Awil. He said that dwindling provisions arriving in the town and skyrocketing food prices have meant that places like Awil, which are generally stable and peaceful, have suffered the effects of the conflict taking place in other parts of the country. He added that it's imperative that fighting stops so that citizens of the world's newest nation, South Sudan, can live in peace and enjoy the benefits of independence. The insecurity has directly affected the cost of goods in Greater Awil, and Mr. Shearer heard from UN humanitarian agencies working in the region how many families had migrated north to Sudan because they either could not produce crops on their farms or could not afford the high price of staple foods in the markets. The agencies, the UN agencies, have stepped in to provide emergency humanitarian aid in a region where the UN Food and Agriculture Agency, FAO, says 52% of people are food insecure. Speaking to Mr. Shearer, the governor of Awil State, Ronald Rue Dueng, said his administration was doing all it could to move his people from dependency on emergency food aid to a more resilient rural agricultural model of production, including the piloting of a new community farming approach to feed the most vulnerable people. Mr. Shearer also heard about the efforts underway to build peaceful understanding between communities, particularly pastoral communities who arrive on a seasonal basis from Sudan, coming south to share water and grazing land with the residents of Greater Awil. And UNMISS is facilitating improved intercommunal understanding through dialogue, an initiative supported by Awil East Governor Deng Deng Akwe, who was also at that meeting with Mr. Shearer.
Thank you, Mr. Spokesman. Thank you.
It was a pleasure, Matt.
Yeah, thank you.